Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday, February 24th, a little after 9 o'clock Eastern. That means it is time for the Hoops HD report.
Yes, it is.
Griggs is excited. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood.
Excited.
Got
I was
John
just,
Titel one side up here. Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org on the other side. A very excited puppet in the middle named David Griggs. His side's Matt Zukowski, David Dorman. Joby Fortson back with us. We missed you last week, Joby. Joby, welcome back as well. So we got a full panel here to go over anything and everything going on in college basketball, on the court, off the court, away from the court. But perhaps the most important thing in all of college basketball is the debut of our new Hoops HD Report logo.
Oh, that is amazing. Yes. I mean,
awesome.
I'd like to thank all of the people that worked so tirelessly on this. I mean, we picked it out of hundreds of designs, spent hours and hours just picking the design.
Anyhow, let's get right to the show here. I figured we'd start this week as we do pretty much every week in the Southeastern Conference, where Joby, let me start with you, actually. And let's start right at the top here with the unanimous number one team of the nation, the Auburn Tigers, took care of Georgia and took care of Kentucky this week.
Arkansas.
Wrong game. Arkansas this week. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're
I got
not
the Calipari's mixed up. Here.
Yeah.
They're not making friends with Slive because they're hurting. Those would have been basically bid clinchers for very bubblicious Arkansas and Georgia. I mean, Auburn keeps rolling. They're a number one seed. And the question we have is, if they slip up, how many slips would they be allowed to still get a one seed? I think a lot. I think, look at their remaining schedule. I mean, they could lose 3-4 of their next five, and they're still a one seed. I mean, it's like, and it's because the teams they lose to in this conference, they're protected seeds, so it's not like a big bad loss to lose at Kentucky, at A&M, Alabama in a rivalry game, even if it is on the plains. I mean, and Ole Miss is also about a fifth, sixth seed right now. I mean, it's I mean, Auburn. We can pretty much, I think, we can safely say they're going to be in those CBS promos of the top four pretty safely.
It's an interesting question, Joby, because it's just there's no case study for it. A team that sort of normally to get a one seed, you got to be firing on all cylinders all season long. You can slip up, but it not much. It's rare that you see a team with five or six losses on the one line. It's happened, but it's rare. But you almost never see a team on the one line that enters the field after losing three or four or five in a row. But you've never seen a team off the one line with this many wins against the teams that are in the top half of the bracket away from home. I'm intend to agree with you. They've always said, and I've believed them, that they look at what you did in November with the same level of scrutiny as what you did in that last regular season game. And if that's true, if the whole season counts the same, is there such a thing as a lock for a one seed? And does Auburn have it? I think they might. Look at that.
I'd say one more win to not even be questioning it, Griggs, but I'm there with you.
And let's face it, they're going to get it. I mean, we're talking a worst case scenario that will not be happening.
I pulled up their in-state rivals here on the right side. And Rocco, let me bring you in on this discussion here on Alabama. Interesting week, loss, but then they bounced back with a win over Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, interesting week. I think it was just enough to hold on as the last number one seed in my projection today. And that's just because they've taken five total losses right now. The one thing that keeps them on the one line is those eight elite wins in the top 1A
of the quad. Is that better audio there?
Rocco, you sound like a children's record player that with a Fisher-Price plastic magnet. You're staticky all over the place.
Okay, let me try again. Somebody else take that one.
All right, Matt, you want to pick up on the Alabama discussion here while Rocco gets his audio fixed?
Yeah, that's the one. I remember when we had to submit our rankings last night. I actually still had them as a third number one seed, but it's fairly close with them, Florida, Tennessee, and Houston. I think, yeah, that's one. Four from two. And I somehow sneak have some suspicion Houston's getting one of those. Is this, 'cause I think they're going to pull the double of the Big 12. And therefore, it's going to be that three-team SEC fight for one of those spots. And still favor Alabama as of now, but it's really close.
Yeah, and if we look beyond these top two, Alabama, Auburn, we're still on the one line here, Dorman. With the Florida Gators, they go ahead, they pick up a pair of wins, Oklahoma and at LSU this week.
Yeah, there are no easy games, and they got two more huge wins, and I think they sit pretty comfortable if as far as making a run for a one seed. There's gonna they'll probably lose again. There's no shame in that. Their schedule is tough down the stretch, and then obviously the SEC tournament. But I could see them losing again before you know they could lose to Alabama or even Ole Miss or A&M and still have a one seed. I think it's really possible. You know, make a run to the semis or the finals in the SEC. I think they'll hold on to that one spot if they do that.
They'll hold on, but there's hell, Griggs, there's
Yeah.
another SEC team right on their heels here. How about Tennessee, especially with the win at A&M this week?
Yeah, the one at A&M, I think, is their best win of the year. In fact, I don't even think it's close. I know that Florida has the bigger net, and they're actually ahead of A&M on the seed list.
Hold on, 1 second. This is just for Tytel. They did lose the aggregate to Florida, though. Okay, go
They lost the aggregate to Florida, and that's on the team sheets, the aggregate scores. Chad, when did you become such a big soccer fan? Right,
That's the only soccer term I know, honestly, but go ahead, Griggs.
Okay. But the win at A&M, I almost think that that propels them almost back up to the one line. I didn't I go back and forth between them and Houston. It's hard to me for me to imagine Houston not getting it if they win out through and go for the double in the process, which I think they're good enough to do and will do. But I mean that is a stacked resume. Their worst loss on it is the loss at Vanderbilt. And while Vanderbilt is not probably not in the top half of the bracket, they beat top half of the bracket teams and protected seeds on their home court. And the committee has to be aware of where that game was played. I mean, there's a little ampersand indicating that it was at Vanderbilt. Surely they'll be realize that.
Yeah. Tytel, I pulled up the A&M team that Tennessee just beat, and we're just still looking at amazing profiles as we go through the SEC here.
We certainly are. Uncle Buzz is getting it done, and they certainly had a bit of a, I wouldn't say, I mean, they've lost two in a row, but they've lost them to Mississippi State and Tennessee, so it's hard to say. I don't think toe stubbing is accurate, and still have plenty of tier one, triple A chances with at Florida on March 1st, followed by Auburn at home. I don't think they're going to win either, but you never know. Certainly tons of tier one wins already.
Oh.
Their defense is top 10 in the nation, so I think that it'll travel. I don't know what this team's ceiling is. I don't think they're going to make the Final Four, but like this is one of those like if you get a team with a bad offense who struggles against a good defense, they could win a lot of those matchups in March.
Yeah, I think we have Rocco back. So Rocco,
Yeah.
why don't I toss you another team? How about Missouri, a team that is, you know, just I think almost quietly, at least in terms of the national media, putting together an amazing season here.
Yeah, they have. I mean, they played extremely well.
Good audio.
And
Yeah.
good. They played extremely well, you know, these last couple of weeks, minus the game on Saturday. They fell short, but I think I'm not too concerned. They were on the road in that contest, and you know, they finish up with the look at their schedule on your screen here at Oklahoma, at Vandy. I think they can win those. That would be detrimental to those bubble teams if they do, and then finish with a strong win over Kentucky to roll into the SEC tournament. You know, they're right there, I think, to be selected as a top 16 protected seed. The only thing that held me back today was that loss on Saturday. I know Purdue also lost. And Maryland didn't play at all. Those were the three I was looking at for the last spot. So I'm just waiting for Missouri to punch their stamp, but I think they're right on the doorstep.
Well, Rocco and Tytel, I guess, do things maybe not for a protected seed, but in compared to the rest of them, this is a strong profile. There's no denying it. But if you're looking for what separates them from other teams or what separates other teams from them, The number of wins away from home could be more, and the non-conference strength of schedule could have been better when you're comparing them to Purdue, Maryland, the other teams that you mentioned. Will that hurt them?
It does right now. I mean, they're one of the few teams in that group with a losing record away from home. But on the flip side, you have Mississippi State on the road, Florida on the road, and Georgia on the road. It's their only three on the road, but there are three really strong ones, and everything else looks good. So you can take them. It's just a matter of, you know, it's a beauty pageant, right? You got to pick the one you like the most. And Purdue, you know, they've got a 7-7 away from home. So you like that a little bit better as a whole than a 3-6.
Mm-hmm.
Tytel, I want to switch over to the SEC bubble now, which is also a pretty big picture. I pulled up Arkansas on the left there. We just mentioned they just got that win over Missouri. How about the Razorbacks?
What a timely question, Chad. ESPN on the broadcast just did a blind resume of Arkansas against the Tar Heels, so you couldn't have asked a better, more timely question. John Calipari's first year in Fayetteville has been one long roller coaster, frankly. 11-2 in non-conference play, the signature win over Michigan at MSG. They've been beaten up in conference play, but even after losing McDonald's All-American Boogie Fland for the year due to right thumb surgery last month, they still got plenty of great wins this month. Kentucky, Texas, Mizzou. Four regular season games left as they try to finish 500 in league play. But as we've seen, the puppet is well aware winning at Vandy is tough. We're all aware beating Mississippi State anywhere is tough. But one reason they're top 10 in the nation, six blocks per game. That stat is their 7-2 Kentucky transfer is Zvonimir Ivicic, 20 blocks in his past six games. And looking ahead, if they can sneak into the tournament as an 11 seed, I assume, and if Illinois ends up as a 6 seed, which is within their range, how would we like the rematch of their Thanksgiving game featuring Zvonimir and his twin brother Tomislav, Bracha Sine Rukuyu, Bracha Se Morayu Berliti, which, as everyone knows, is Croatian for brothers don't shake hands, brothers got a hug.
There we go.
I did not know that, actually. I'm not up to speed on my Croatian today.
Yeah, well, we all know from the years that Tytel is an expert on Croatian basketball. Joby, let me go back to you. I pulled up another one of these SEC bubble teams there on the right, Vanderbilt. And I think this is one of the more interesting profiles just because they're not hampered by that losing record against the top three tiers like Arkansas and Texas and the like. But there's some holes in this profile, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, this is the and both these teams kind of hit the same issue, which is when you play in this ridiculously tough league, somebody's got to lose. And it's tough to collect win after win after win. Arkansas, you know, you feel it a little bit in the overall record and the amount of losses that add up. Vanderbilt, Vanderbilt, but I don't care who you are. And Rock, I know you disagree. 321 non-conference out, strength of schedule. You got to get yourself off the bubble. Now they're doing their best. Yeah, they're trying their best. But if they are one of the last teams, you know, if it's between them and a team with a much superior strength of schedule out of conference, they're going to be on the outside. I truly believe it. But luckily for them, they play in the SEC, Vanderbilt does. And so they get their chances at wins to get well clear of the bubble. And so, you know, they at least, unlike a lot of people in that position, they actually have the chance to win their way in.
Yeah, and they got that huge win over Ole Miss this weekend, which was very important. Dorman, another team that got a very important win this weekend was the Oklahoma Sooners, a team that had been heading in the wrong direction. And can you believe we're talking about a team that's 4-10 in conference as being possibly in the field?
I never thought I would see this, but going into the season with the depth that the SEC had, or we thought they were going to have, we even talked about early in the season, how bad of a conference record can you have and get in? Now, they finish Kentucky, Ole Miss, Missouri, Texas. They're not done. This isn't enough yet. They're going to have to at least squeeze out one more. Two would be great, and I'd almost call them safe. But they're going to have to win because they got to start piling up wins because, like you just said, they got 10 conference losses. Four more is 14. That's probably too many. I don't think they can get over the hump with a 4-14 conference record. They're going to need one or two more. So – the Sooners did themselves well this week. Porter Moser is alive and kicking, but he needs to do, he needs to get one more.
Griggs?
Yeah, I another thing that jumps out is just so poor in true road games. They do have the five neutral games. Another statistic or a categorical thing is that no team has ever been selected without at least two true road wins. So this would be breaking two rules. One, I don't think anybody's ever been selected that was more than four games below 500, which they currently are. So I still think that they need to win some of those games, and they certainly think they need to win one of those two remaining road games. I had a thought on Vanderbilt, but I think we've moved past them now. I'll just share that real quick. Just another thing. I think in my observation where a lot of bracketologists miss, it's on home court heroes. I know that no one from this committee was around, but the year everybody thought SMU would get selected and they didn't. The main criticism was they didn't win it enough away from home. I think Notre Dame one year had four or five wins against top 25 teams and didn't get selected because it was all at home. And Vanderbilt is not good away from home. They're not as good as a team like, say, Drake is away from home. When they played Drake away from home, they did not win. I don't think Vanderbilt's won a game away from home that's as difficult as the one Drake just won yesterday, not to go under the radar, but are they on the bubble? I don't know, but wherever they are, it better damn well be behind Drake.
I know Rocco agrees with that one too. gives that, yeah. that you know, when you beat Drake, Drake shouldn't be left out while you go in.
I think Drake's outperformed them. I really do. But Vanderbilt's won a lot of big games at home. But traditionally, though, if there's teams that every bracketologist like Jerry Palms, Joe Lenardi, whoever it is that does it with the major networks miss on, it's the home court heroes.
Well, this would be a huge miss, Greg said, because I agree with you, because we have seen them play and Drake won. So if it's even – if this is even a spot – if this is – a game where there's one spot left for one of these two teams and Drake doesn't get it, there should be an investigation.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope that Drake wins their tournament. Yeah. And if Drake loses to Bradley, Drake is probably still okay. But if Drake loses, I forget how the MVC is set up, but you know, conference,
they have two very weak teams to close out the season. Right. They should win them
if
both.
If they stub their toe with a couple of quad four losses or quad three losses, you know, that plays into it. And so I'm not going to say, oh, it's a binary choice. Let's see how the teams play out. But yeah, right now, the best what can solve everything is Drake getting that auto. And if Drake gets that auto, they're on the 11 line at least, if not higher.
Yeah, and they better be higher than Vandy.
One more team, one more game for this past week to discuss, Matt. Texas should be sitting there at 10-10 versus the top three tiers, except they give South Carolina their first SEC win of the season.
I feel like that should almost be disqualifying, but and that puts it. That's what, I did not have Texas on my ballot yesterday to where it was disqualified for me. That 9-11 against the top three tiers, that lovely little non-conference schedule at 290. Like they have a whole lot of warts and like a little bit of some decent like. But like Kentucky and Missouri, we've seen that they're not exactly road court heroes. They're definitely better at home and on the road. A&M, that's the one that might prop them up a little bit. And then you beat Oklahoma, but congratulations, so did nine other SEC teams. So like, you know, this is a team that like I don't think has any business being near the field right now.
I'm with you, Matt. I don't want to see these teams that played. I don't want to see a home court hero that loaded up on cupcakes for the out-of-conference schedule that just went to the pastry cart in the field.
They have a fascinating game, though, coming up this week. They're at Arkansas coming Wednesday night.
Very good game.
It feels like almost an elimination type of game.
Yeah.
I wish.
I wish it were, too. Yeah.
I think it's a winner in, loser out game for Friday's bracket.
Yeah.
Another elimination game with Georgia after that.
but we still have to have 37 at large to you know,
who says
teams, you know, in
which
this
is exactly
field. And so
yeah
there's going to be you know, we've gone through it. There's four or five, if you include Georgia, five SEC teams right on the bubble. Three of them are getting in, I think the numbers just dictate that three of them are going to get in.
Well, who says, Joe? What if the committee just came out and said, you know what? We only selected 64.
It's also why we should root for Drake not to win so we can get rid of one of these power conference teams.
Yep. Yeah, your head will explode because Drake, unless it's to Bradley, loses. They're out. I don't think the committee selects them. I think the committee will not. Right or
okay,
wrong.
Okay, we're at about 5 minutes of Drake talk here, so let's go ahead and
More on Wednesday.
But let's take a look at the upcoming games here, because we got some big ones this week, as every week. We got Mississippi State, Alabama coming tomorrow. We got Ole Miss, Auburn on Wednesday. Ooh. Kentucky road tested Oklahoma. Ooh. Vandy's going to be at A&M. Huge one Saturday here, Auburn at Kentucky. And at the same exact time, I believe, is the A&M Florida game. We've also got the Alabama at Tennessee game.
Oh, that one's fun. Yeah. A Saturday.
So we've got
Missouri Vanderbilt. Yeah, that one's kind of big. Oklahoma.
Ole Miss is kind of big. Georgia, Texas.
Arkansas needing wins.
So as with every week, we could circle the entire SEC schedule. It's going to be another huge week here. But let's move over to the Big Ten Conference, where as we record this right now, Michigan is up 2 on Nebraska in the second half. But putting that game aside, because it will not go final, obviously, before we're done. Dorman, let me start with you. And, should we start at the top with Sparty, with their win over Purdue, followed by the road win over Michigan this week?
Absolutely. Playing great ball. Izzo has his guys focused. They went out to L.A. and they stubbed their toes a few times. They had gone out there, I believe, with a perfect Big Ten Conference record, took two losses, but have turned it around since then. Purdue and, like you said, in Ann Arbor at the Chrysler Center on Friday night, they played fantastic. They got big stops down the road, down the end of the game, and really sent Michigan looking like, I felt Michigan State looked like the better team as they went down the final few minutes in the game. Michigan State looked real strong. And I'm with you, Chad. I think Sparty at the top of the Big Ten there, they would be my first team in.
Yeah, and where are we up to here? Rocco, let me go back to you about another team, though, that had a – could have been right there. But Wisconsin – kind of had a little bit of trouble at the end of the game against Oregon, just a little bit.
Yeah, they were it looked like they were gonna get the win late and collapsed down the stretch. Oregon took advantage and then owned the overtime, and then Wisconsin was one of the great stories of the, you know, the prior whatever it was 10 to 14 days, working their way up to a 2 seed on Friday on my site, and I think, you know, a lot of people agreed with that. I think that was a shocker for them, and Oregon really needed it. You know, Oregon had hit some bumps in this conference, as all these West Coast teams have, well documented, and they are right back in the scene. I think from an Oregon standpoint, up to a 6 line today. Wisconsin, just such a weird dynamic. They were 7 on my seed list Friday, but everybody 7 through 12 lost. They went 0-6 this weekend. It was never seen that happen this late in the season before that I can remember. And just one of those weekends. You know, it's February. Everybody's trying to play their best ball, make some adjustments. Wisconsin's a really interesting case study. You know, they've got the big road win at Purdue now, but they just have the 4 wins against the field. They've played a little bit of the lighter side of the Big Ten thus far. So I think there's some jury still out, but they've won so much and they've been pretty dominant. They've got good road marks. So I still think they're a safe 3 seed based on what the committee already shared with us.
Let's talk about a team that's heading very much in the wrong direction. Tytel, let me get your opinion on them first here. Purdue has now lost 4 in a row. A couple of them may have been excusable, but maybe not all of them.
Certainly not all of them. Not that they're having tier 3 losses. Their last tier 2 loss was over a month ago. So, like, I get it. They might be running out of steam a bit. They might be realizing, wow, like, we don't have the 2-time National Player of the Year and Zach Edey to help save the day as he did multiple times last year. But if you look at the metrics, strength of schedule is top 10. The Nets top 20. The predictives are all top 20. I certainly wouldn't push the panic button. If they lose to Rutgers, for God's sake, then we push the panic button.
Watch out! This Rutgers team, red hot. You know, we're getting healthy again. And Boley came back. He wasn't supposed to be back this season. You watch out. We're going to make our run here in the
red hot tournament. They wear red uniforms.
I'll tell you what, Joby. How about
Illinois? I just everybody look at eighth place team right there.
Yes, first of all, yes. A shout out to Illinois there in eighth place. Sorry, Sionilai. before we get to them, Joby, Oregon is the other half of that Wisconsin game. But how about the Ducks who suddenly run off four in a row and may have righted the ship? You're on mute, though.
As far as their seed, they've completely righted the ship. I mean, they are not a protected seed yet, but now they actually can gun for one. And they have three extremely winnable games left. They put up a gaudy record with the great wins they already have in the bank. And wow. You know, we're talking about who's going to be in that. You know, there was a discussion in the SEC. Oh, who is going to be that last team? You know, can Missouri make it? Can it? I think Oregon, you better watch out for. You know, they do have their SEC scalp with Alabama, so that's a pretty good one right there.
And A&M, they got two of them.
And A&M, someone they might be competing with if A&M takes a dip. Oregon. Yeah, assuming they don't give Indiana more hope at a bid and don't slip up, you know, on the road trip to Washington, you know, this team is primed and ready to take a step. And the fact is the schedule lays out pretty well for them because they get a lot of that. They get a lot of that at home and on the West Coast. Then they get to prepare for the Big Ten tournament. It's not like a rush like for many teams it will be.
One of the things about this Oregon team, and they're what I would call schizophrenic. Maybe I overuse that term. But this team is all over the place, and you never know who's going to show up. And you wonder, how is it that not just on – like, can you have multiple bad nights? You mentioned that they're on the West Coast and playing at home. Well, for a while, they were actually better away from home. Like, look at – when you look at who they've lost to, Nebraska at home, I think that's one of two of Nebraska's only wins. Yet they beat Alabama on a neutral floor and won at Wisconsin. If I were Vegas, would you just take this team off the board entirely? Because they're too hard to predict.
I'm sorry, Rocco. Do you have a comment on that?
No, I just unmuted. I thought something was coming.
Okay. I'm just going to go to Matt next because I've got Illinois coming up here on the right hand side.
Chad and has lost control of the.
I have lost control of the show.
Yeah.
And the Illini have now lost three in a row, and this is just a team that, you know, suddenly they're only 11-11 against the top three tiers, going in the wrong direction, and kind of no-showed that Duke game.
Yeah, they were appropriately being shown upside down the standings. That's where their season's going. And this is what we'll see this week. If in a rivalry game, if Iowa maybe does something to salvage their season a little bit, we could really be talking about maybe just being on the bubble. And like, they're not a lock by any means yet. Because, put away, if they win the Iowa game, they lose their next three. You're suddenly talking 18-14, something like 11-14 against the top three tiers. Like, this is in some real danger that you wouldn't have thought of a couple of weeks ago.
A team that is rising fast here, Tytel. How about the Indiana Hoosiers? I hate to admit it, but I personally think they're there. I don't know what you think.
So number 17 in the preseason poll, just to remember what the expectations were. Coach Mike Woodson will not be returning to Bloomington next year, despite a winning record in each of his four seasons on the sideline. We still might be going out in style next month. The Hoosiers had back-to-back 25-point losses to Iowa and Illinois in mid-January, then a five-game losing streak that stretched into early February, which is why we all gave up on them. But they flipped the switch 2 weeks ago. They won at Michigan State, Sparty's only home loss all season, and then got the big home win over Purdue last Sunday to improve to 7-9 in conference play. Four regular season games left. It'll be an uphill but not impossible battle to finish 500. and the season finale against the Buckeyes might be the most bubblicious game of March. Bad news, their 31% shooting behind the arc remains atrocious. Good news, they have NBA size in the front court. Three starters stand 6'9", 6'9", and 7 foot.
I think we discuss Ohio State every week. And Rocco, let me give you one more shot at them here. Because maybe you and Dorman also, because Dorman, I know you were kind of in favor of them. Rocco, you want to, you know, I don't know that I see it with this Ohio State team, though. Maybe you're, I think you're with me.
Yeah, I think they have to go 3-0. I don't even see them getting in at 2-1 in any of those games. They're, you know, USC and Indiana are good road games. Obviously, Indiana barely in right now. Or close to it. Nebraska at home is another tournament-level win, but it's just the sheer amount of wins versus losses that they've had that matter. And they're so far behind at this point that there's no runway left.
Yeah, Dorman, I pulled up that Nebraska profile. Right now, that you know, they're in still in a close battle with this Michigan team, but this Nebraska team, I think they're pretty solid right now, and they were not there a few weeks ago.
I think they're pretty solid too. And after last night, I went back and looked at Ohio State. I'm more on your guys' side than I was probably last night. Texas and Penn State wins; those are not even tournament teams. So you got three wins for Ohio State. I'm starting to go against. I think the Buckeyes are in a big trouble here. But to the Cornhuskers, out of conference win at Creighton, that'll hold up well. They've beaten UCLA; that's another good win. I think Nebraska's on an upward trend. They have a big game tonight against Michigan. It's been tight the whole way. That would be huge for Nebraska. Then they get Minnesota at home. But Nebraska's on an upward trend, another win or two, and I think they're safely in the field. And now they're working on their seed.
Yeah, real quick on Nebraska, sometimes you can't – I mean, if you look at their profile – sometimes you have to kind of go beyond what's on the profile. And I'm sorry, but I cannot advocate for selecting a team that that routinely wears dark uniforms at home.
Okay.
You need to wear white at home or a light color.
Well, I'll bust you anyhow. Oh, sure, there's a 2 miles.
It's 2025, Griggs. 2025.
I thought we were going with 10 miles.
See, but if you're colorblind, it's hard to tell the teams apart.
Some big games after tonight's game. We've got Michigan State, Maryland Wednesday night, a huge one. Rutgers at Michigan on Thursday. UCLA at Purdue on Friday. Actually, we didn't even discuss this UCLA team. On top of that, Wisconsin, Michigan State, a huge one on Sunday. Illinois, a big one at Michigan also. And
it's always fun when Mick Cronin has to get on the airplane. You're going to get some good quotes.
But let's jump over to the Big 12 conference.
Mick Cronin must be so fun at parties. Oh man,
Joby, why don't we start at the top of this conference with this Houston team? Win at Arizona State, home win over Iowa State, slightly shorthanded at Iowa State if we want to use Matt's language from last night, or very shorthanded if we use Hytel's language. But here's Houston sitting at 15-1 in the conference.
Doesn't matter. I mean, Houston's just cruising. You know, the big criticism, you know, 2 months ago in Houston is that what do they do out of conference? They played people. They didn't get the wins you need out of conference and all that stuff. Well, luckily for them, the Big 12 – has plenty of bid-worthy teams, and they have dominated as they've gone. And they have slowly but surely, it's like I remember, in December, they are in the field maybe. Oh, in January, okay, they might be fighting for they might be wearing white. Early February, they're protected seed maybe. Now the one line is within sight. Now they got to win out pretty much to do that. They've got to do the double. But – it's there for the taking. They do the double. I mean, Mike Slive's not going to be happy because it'll be probably an SEC school's expense. But, you know, the Houston Cougars. And it's Samson got his team playing like we thought they would preseason. The defense is still among the best in the country. They had the offense is finally starting to shape into form, not finally, but has the second half of the season. This Houston team, does anyone want to play them in the tournament? Only Only Auburn right now would be still okay.
I would love to play them in the tournament. That would mean my team was in the tournament.
I think I will throw a 15 or a 16 seed.
Just a quick note: we are recording. They are playing right now as we record this. They're in a close game early with Texas Tech, which is probably the toughest game left. Is probably their toughest game left probably all season here.
But it's a road game at Tech, and they are up.
I mean, it's early.
But a perfect example is Houston. They go in, they beat Tech. That might in itself vault them to the one line as we stand. But like I said, they need to they just like the SC, anyone going for a one seed right now needs to maintain that strength.
Yeah. And to amplify Joby's point, it's kind of hard to say that the number four team in the nation is sort of being undervalued, but they may be, and they never played bad. If you look at their losses, first of all, look at who they lost to, all protected seeds in San Diego State, and secondly, look at the margins, 3 in overtime, 1-5, and really, since the month of November, they've had one loss. It was in overtime at home to Texas Tech. Granted, it was which they could avenge tonight. They're as good as anybody. They really are. Their only non-overtime loss was a close game on a neutral court to Auburn.
let's move on to a few other teams here. Dorman and Titel, I know you're both biased. Maybe I'll go to Matt on this for an unbiased view of what happened at the end of the BYU-Arizona game on Saturday.
An atrocity would not be just enough description for that call. That may be the worst call I've ever seen. Because like other ones, there's maybe like 5 or 10% interpretation of it being the right call. There's 0.0 on this. That was the wrong call, absolutely. And it changed the course of the game. Like that ball hits the floor, no foul call. Arizona wins by one. Instead, Richie Saunders hits the 2 free throws. BYU wins by 1. They're probably in the field now, and Arizona is a threat of losing the protected seed.
Yeah, and how about that BYU team, Matt, though? This team is now – I mean, they got the Arizona win. I think this is a solid profile now with that win on there.
And if you look, basically all the metrics are good. So there isn't even an outlier saying, oh, whatever, like 45 and strength of record or whatever. Like they're in the 20s or 30s and everything, and the 18th there at Torvik for the predictive metrics. So therefore – the OAR of 30, I think they're right, would be an 8 or 9 seed to start today.
Agreed.
If you could place them on the internet.
I think they're wearing white.
Rocco, I'd like to get your take on the team that is heading the absolute wrong way and for the first time in 4 years is out of the top 25 polls, the Kansas Jayhawks. I know they got a win over Oklahoma State, but coming off of losses to BYU or Utah, and they're just looking so bad lately.
Yeah, they had a rough trip to the Beehive State, that's for sure. And some unprecedented margins. I think that loss to BYU was the worst ever, or at least in the modern era. That's all problematic. I think a lot of the different tools out there would suggest they could fall as far as a 7. I put a tweet out this morning because it was alarming to look at the BPI, to see the BPI still have them number 11. I was comparing them to St. Mary's just as a good comparison, where St. Mary's is clearly better in all the other metrics. And the BPI has Kansas 18 spots above St. Mary's, who's number 29 mysteriously in that great tool of ESPN's. But that's not Kansas's fault. It's just another lesson learned for anybody trying to project the bracket. Do not mess with a blue blood, no matter what. So I think they're safely a 6 because they have some of that clout, and they do finish with some big ones. You know, they have Texas Tech this Saturday. They've got a road one, another trip in altitude tonight. So we'll see how they perform against Colorado, who's actually won a couple games lately. And then, of course, a really brutal one at Houston and a home game with Arizona. So I think all four of these games are challenging.
Yeah, Dorman, he mentioned that Colorado's won some games lately. One of them being over Baylor, who's a team that's also headed in the wrong direction.
Yeah, Baylor's a tough team to figure out. Just when you think they look good and they're putting it all together and getting healthy, they go out there and look terrible. The St. John's win's looking really good lately. Arkansas is getting better by the day, you know, and then the Kansas win. So really we're talking about 3 wins against the field, in my opinion. I would suggest they don't lose to any of the next three games on their schedule there. The Houston game, we'll forget about there for a minute, but they really need to knock out Cincinnati on the road. Oak State at home is a must, and that TCU has had a little life lately because this Baylor's resume has definitely got holes in it. The one thing I think will help them out, the non-conference strength of schedule, they really did challenge themselves. They played a tough out-of-conference schedule. So if it comes down to it, I think it bends their way. But Baylor needs to get going and get going quickly here.
Yeah. A couple of – three out of their four opponents are not tournament teams. I think they need to win their next three.
Yep.
One of those games, Tytel, is against TCU, who got the huge win over Texas Tech. Didn't get to follow that up with another win, but is this team suddenly in the picture a little bit?
No, but Coach Jamie Dixon has put together quite the head-scratching resume, so try to follow along. Non-conference play, they lost to Santa Clara by 17, but then they beat Xavier. Then Frankie Collins, the ASU transfer, broke his foot to end his season in mid-December. Then in January, they beat BYU, but they lost to Utah at home. And last week, they beat Texas Tech to get their signature win of the season, then lost to Cincinnati by double digits. Doesn't make any sense. Each of their past four wins by 5 points or less, which is even more amazing because their free throw shooting 65%, bottom 15 in the nation. And Dixon might be a great recruiter of high school seniors, but each of his six players who have started at least 14 games this year are not guys who came through the pipeline. They are transferring in from elsewhere. Collins, we mentioned, Noah Reynolds from Green Bay, Bashan Alep from ODU, Brendan Wenzel from Wyoming, Trezarian White from UNC Wilmington, and Ernest Uday from Kansas.
There we go. And there was the rest of the results for this past week, but let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule here in the Big 12. As we mentioned, as we're recording this, the Houston-Texas Tech game going on, and Kansas-Colorado coming later tonight. But we've got Baylor with an important road game tomorrow at Cincinnati, actually. Yeah, we've got, what else we have here? Cincinnati's at Houston. Texas Tech at Kansas, a huge one on Saturday. Arizona at Iowa State, another huge one. West Virginia at BYU is a big one. And next Monday night, Kansas at Houston Tech.
Yeah. BYU really playing well lately, and I think they're going to get it done at home because they're very, very good at home.
Well, and Chad, one thing that I'll add, I want to add real quick on TCU for our listeners. Notice the net. It's 74. That's a big deal because the committee and Chad, you know this firsthand, when Rutgers fell below 75, that was a factor when they didn't make it just a couple of years ago. That number is a big deal because they don't like giving teams who aren't in tier one for a road win or tier two for a home win. That's kind of a demarcation point. So watch that net on TCU.
One last little quick Big 12 note also. Utah, Craig announced today that Craig Smith is not being retained. He's gone. Oh. I don't understand why they don't wait until the end of the season when we just got a few games left. I also don't understand why they do it just a few days after they beat Kansas. But there he goes. Well,
it's been kind of a rough year if you kind of look at their profile. And I think the straw that really broke the camel's back was BYU's win at Arizona.
There's a lot of truth to that, actually.
I meant it half kidding, but only half kidding. I know you know him, Rocco. I know you might know something. But when you're in a bidding, like when you're in just sort of a resource and financial and bidding war with a rival, you tend to do stupid things like that. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. And, you know, there was some comments about that online today. I think BYU, obviously, is NIL is through the roof. They got the number one player in the country by far coming in next year in AJ Dibansta. And they have, Utah's the primary public school, obviously, in the state. So there's all this unnecessary pressure coming from all that with BYU playing well. That doesn't help things. But obviously, Craig is a great coach. They didn't have nearly the resources that BYU does. And I think the reason they make the move now is to try to get a head start on the search. But I don't understand it from the standpoint, unless they hire some very rich person that can get them a lot of NIL, I don't know how it's going to give them that big of an advantage in this particular situation. So, I think that's the mentality, is to try to get a head start on the search.
Okay.
Let's move on here. We are running way late on time. We got a lot to get through here. But let's stay on the coaching news real quickly as I jump over to the ACC here, because a little coaching news out of Miami as well, where they are set. The contract is signed. They're set to hire Jai Lewis, who is the Duke associate head coach right now. By the way, the two teams are going to be playing in 2 nights from now. I don't know which sideline Lewis is even going to be on for this game at this point. But it looks like Miami has found their guy, and I guess there's no details yet as to when he's actually going to take over the program or not. But talking about the top of the standings here, and Matt, let me start with you. Duke pounded Illinois. We mentioned that game earlier. Just looking so good right now.
Yeah, they are playing like the best team in the country right now. Now, it's only for maybe like the last few weeks or so that I think they've been a little bit ahead of Auburn. But like, it'll be tough for them to overtake Auburn for the number one overall seed. But I think if you asked everyone who you don't want to play, I think Duke would actually rank higher than Auburn in that case.
Yeah. And the note, probably the most notable game in terms of the bubble teams here, Griggs, NC State knocking off Wake Forest and really making Wake Forest in pain here. Joby's already in pain.
Yeah.
They were getting close. I mean, on the bubble, but inside of it. I think we selected them last night, or maybe we didn't, but we did, had them
we
right
did,
there.
Just barely.
Just barely. But that is, I'm just going to state the obvious. When you're on the bubble, you need to hold serve at home against teams that are not, and they didn't. And not only is NC State not on the bubble, they're about 1,000 miles from it. They can't see it with a telescope.
They're not even in position right now to even try to do what they did last year, because right now they wouldn't even make the ACC tournament. It's only top 15.
Is a three-team ACC possible?
The bottom three, cannot make the tournament. That's right. But three are in, and then you've got, I think right now, I don't think SMU really – they just don't have many pathways.
No.
It's North Carolina and Wake, and those two need to take care of business. After NC State's loss where Wake was in, North Carolina did what they had to tonight, but it's not like North Carolina's resume is just thrilling. North Carolina, though, has one piece, if you don't mind me shifting to that. North Carolina has one piece of asset that no other person has, and that is – the chair of the selection committee.
I was prepared for this discussion. Here is that selection committee, Joby. This is North Carolina's best thing than their resume.
And if you don't think Bubba Cunningham doesn't have influence in that room, I'm a Virginia grad. I thought Virginia had no shot at a bid yet last year. It's Bubba Cunningham who got Virginia that bid. He can move that room. And if it's a close call, I mean, if they're out, they're not going to be in. But if it's a close call as of today, North Carolina, and I don't even have it. The JNG doesn't even calculate that. But North Carolina, yes, believe it or not, is the last team in the field right now. Rocco, you'd really like Drake to lose because Drake is ahead of them.
I agree with everything Joby said. The problem with this, with the ACC, Joby, is minus any win besides Duke doesn't move the needle for me. It just doesn't get you anywhere.
Clemson's actually now knocking on the door. They're actually a six, five or a six now, and they could be a four if they make a run all the way through the ACC tournament.
I think the notable thing here, both these teams have their shots at Duke in the regular season, let alone the ACC tournament. So,
and North Carolina's done it before. Remember, they were on the verge of not making it and beat Duke in a last chance go to get in the tournament a few years ago.
Upcoming games this week. I guess we're just looking for these teams to hold serve. Wake there hosting Virginia, hosting Notre Dame. Then Monday night is their game at Duke, and Carolina there hosting Miami on Saturday. They better not lose that one.
They did win at Tallahassee, which is a nine. It's not an earth shattering win, but that is, that is a tier two that gets you, to the next game without hurting your resume. And that's kind of what North Carolina needs to do right now, and wait and try to beat Duke.
Let's jump over to the Big East Conference. And Tytel, how about this St. John's team? They take care of DePaul. They then take care of UConn. And wow, this team just keeps winning.
I'm a believer. I still don't know how they lost at Villanova, but all their losses are by a handful of points. They're literally like about 7 points away from being undefeated. I assume they'll take care of business at Butler on Wednesday and then destroy Seton Hall to start March. And then the huge game, as Matt knows, going to Marquette at March 8th. Matt, who's going to win that game?
I'm hoping it's Marquette. The way things are going, I'm not sure if I predict it, but.
Yeah, your Marquette team, talk about losing to Villanova, Matt. Just lost to Villanova.
Yeah, I will say when a team goes 12 for 15 from three in the first half, you're not winning against them regardless of that. Could have been DePaul and Marquette would have lost. So that's one of those. And that those are very open looks. It wasn't great defense, but that's still, man, 12 of 15 from three, you're not winning. Like Villanova would be number one if they were to hit those looks that they got against Marquette, against anyone. So, but at the same time, though, it adds to a bunch of losses to where now all of a sudden 20-7, which isn't bad by any means. You're still like a 5 or 6 seed, but it's no longer. This is what a few weeks ago they were a 2 or 3.
Yeah. Rocco, I got to ask you about our 2-time defending champions here, the UConn Huskies. Just kind of started a pile of losses, and even the games they've won, like that Villanova game, that looks like they should have lost.
It's been a little distressing, I'm sure, for a team that's won back-to-back national titles. But I think in terms of just getting into the dance, they're in good shape because of the fact that 4 of their top 5 games they won. The Gonzaga game. Might not look very good when it's compared to like, you know, an 8-9 seed, but they are a top 10 net win for your resume. Mm-hmm. And then they got the road win at Marquette. They got the road win at Creighton, a road win at Texas, who's bubble, but also quad 1A. It's a very strong top of the UConn profile when compared to this pretty disastrous bubble currently. And you look at the rest of their markers, they're over 500 wherever they need to be. They're still 500 overall away from stores, even though they lost the Seton Hall game. So I think that, you know, obviously you don't like those 3 negative losses. Dayton has now fallen into a subpar loss to go along with Colorado and Seton Hall. But in general, the Huskies are much stronger than some of these other bubble options.
Yeah, but now Danny Hurley's going to be in a spot where his team, if you're looking at a 7-10 seed range, you can have one of these SEC monsters in the second game of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I had them playing Utah State today in an 8-9 game. Winner gets Auburn. So how about UConn, maybe Auburn in the second game? UConn's just not playing very well right now. I think they would probably get beat pretty bad in that matchup.
Upcoming schedule here this week. Pulled up here real quick. We've got big ones like Georgetown at UConn and Villanova at Seton Hall.
There's a real big one Saturday.
Saturday.
Xavier getting close.
Let's circle this Creighton Xavier team. Yeah. We discussed the Xavier team last night, Griggs, but Xavier, towing that bubble line now.
Yeah, you know the cut line, they're straddling it. Maybe more so than any other team. And I the one thing I'll say for them is that I think they're playing well. They're magnificent for about 33 minutes, and then they fall apart.
They fall apart. If they're up by 30, they're normally okay to hold on by five, though.
So. Yeah, but essentially you're right. I mean, if it were a 32-minute game, I think Xavier would be ranked 8th nationally or something. But they've got to figure out how to finish games. I don't know if it's a depth thing or whatever. But really, I mean, you don't have to be a genius. It's elementary. When you're straddling the cut line, when you're right on the bubble, you need to win. They need to win those next 3. Creighton, good, but in not bad on the road. They need all 3 of those. And maybe I think that gets them on the right side of it, but they're still not safe. But they do have a path, and they are playing well, especially for 33 minutes.
All right. I know everyone that's watching has been waiting for this moment in our show. So it is now time for the Joby Fortson Mountain West comments. Joby, have at it. I'll give you the whole conference.
New Mexico and Utah State are tournament teams, and they're going to be, they're going to play an SEC school in the second round. Oh, wait a minute. They won't get past the first in that 8-9 game. So don't worry about it. I'm still on the San Diego State's just not good. They're not just aren't. But would they get a bid today? Yes, they get a bid. They get in as a 10 or 11 right now. But they are going to get boat raced. I mean, when they play a real team. I mean, they really
are. They've played a couple real teams. You know,
yes, Houston. I know. 10 miles. I know. And they should have lost. just remember that. So, Boise. Yeah. Well, you know, Boise's sniffing. They are sniffing. They are about 4 or 5 out. But luckily for them, they get Utah State at home. That would be a very nice win. But Utah State, Boise, realistically, needs to be making a conference final. You know, yeah. And where they will beat, you know, a New Mexico or Utah State again to do it.
Yeah, Rocco mentioned last night that, you know, Boise hasn't lost a game in Nevada yet. So they're poised to win that Mountain West tournament.
They're 4-0. They're 4-0 against the state of Nevada. They swept both of them.
When you go to the NCAA tournament or where a team does and you get to the hotel because the NCAA makes the arrangements, you typically get these welcome baskets. For Boise State, when they go to Dayton, they need to get welcome back baskets. They need to say, welcome back, Boise State, because they're there every year.
The big one this week was Utah State's win over San Diego State. Congrats to Air Force, got their first conference win, albeit over a Fresno State team that is now missing half of its roster because of investigations for related to gambling and all kinds of off-court stuff.
A team that's 5-23 was throwing games? I'm stunned.
0-6, Fresno State, 0-6 in overtime, Chad.
I think that sounds like the Citadel's record, too.
They'd be 11-17, man.
they'd be like Wyoming. They'd be the same as Wyoming.
We actually have a handful of good games this week. We got New Mexico, San Diego State tomorrow night, Utah State at Boise on Wednesday, and even a dangerous Colorado State team hosting Utah State on Saturday.
Yeah, so. Dangerous, especially at home. Certainly not tournament caliber, but dangerous.
Before that, Griggs, we have Colorado State Air Force tomorrow night. I mean, that is a front range game.
Front range. Yeah, Fresno State. Who's betting on Fresno State? Like, normally, I'm all integrity of the game, but if I'm defending those guys in court, it's like, sir, why did you even bet on Fresno State? What the hell were you thinking? You deserve to lose your money.
Titel, over in the American, Memphis did what they needed to do this week. They took care of Florida Atlantic over the weekend. Here they are at 22-5 overall.
And schedule looks good for teams that are not going to be threatening them. As you can see on the left there, all outside the top 100. If they take care of business, they'll be 26-5 entering the conference tourney. I forget if we've locked them or not, but if they're 26-5, I think they've got to be a
near lock, if not a lock. First ballot locked.
Yes. Yeah, we did not lock them on the survival board up there quite yet. I think we decided they need one more win just because of how bad these losses would be. But, yeah. The only other team worth even mentioning is North Texas.
Yes.
And Matt, I think we mentioned them not even in terms of an at-large bid, in terms of very dangerous to steal the auto bid.
That's the one. Actually, I think you ought to send this to Rocco. He had a great post on Blue Sky today about that.
Rocco?
Yeah, which team? I'm sorry.
North Texas.
North Texas. Oh, yeah, stealing North Texas. The bid.
Yeah. My question. Yeah, so North Texas, you know, just looking at the last, basically all of February performance numbers, it's something I'm trying to track for who would actually be performing the best going into these conference tournaments. Only two teams popped as the number one that aren't in our field, at least in over the radar. Talk that we're doing tonight, and North Texas is clearly playing the best in the American per the Torvik data. They're number 39 in the nation. The next closest American team, I think, is 70, and that's Memphis. Wichita's also playing very well. They're around 75. So anyway, North Texas poised to get a 2 or a 3 seed, I think, in the tournament, would be in pretty good shape. Obviously playing pretty close to home, is playing close to home in that thing too.
I like this North Texas team on the court. Their profile, they're not going to get selected, but I love them on the court, and I think they can win this tournament.
And I think if you just one last thought on that. I think if you stack ranked all the conference tournaments for most likely bid steal, this is probably the number one conference to look at.
Yeah.
And we'll drive bracketologists mad because the conference tournament championship game is going to mean contingency brackets Sunday. And all that.
Yeah, we'll.
Oh, yeah. Always, always.
I love contingency brackets.
Memphis hosting Rice and at UAB this week. North Texas, a couple of interesting, tough games here. At Florida Atlantic hosting Wichita State, at least tough by American standards. Dorman, over in the West Coast Conference, how about some congrats to the St. Mary's Gales, sweep Gonzaga, and have already clinched the conference title?
Yep, they played great in Gonzaga the other night. Everyone thought Gonzaga was going to get their revenge. They were playing at home. And here was coming St. Mary's. St. Mary's was not having it. They are the better team this year than Gonzaga, and they've proven that game after game after game. This St. Mary's team is really, really good. Not West Coast really good nationally. This team can do a lot of damage in the NCAA tournament coming up here. I really believe that. I think they can take on some of the Power Conference big boys and hand them losses. They are really talented. Their guards are phenomenal. And I think Randy Bennett's one of the most underrated coaches in the country. Watch out. These Gales are really good.
Joby, I'd like to get your take on the Gonzaga Bulldogs. So I pulled up there on the right. I know you weren't with us last night. We had a bit of a discussion about them. But I just don't get the metrics. And you're a metrics guy. Love them. The resume
and it's not like this is not a case. This is not my Mountain West rant because they played they played legit teams. You know, I mean, look at that, you know, Baylor, Arizona State, San Diego State, Indiana, San Francisco is a great in conference game. The West Coast has, I think, the West Coast Conference has inflated their own metrics a little bit, like the Mountain West, but not to the Mountain West extent. But I can't explain why it's a 10. They're blowing people out. I mean, you look at, I guess, that Baylor win is a example. They're winning by 38. And so that's like, wow, you know, you're beating Baylor, who's a solid tournament team, by 38. And then they lose to Kentucky in overtime. So, I mean – those are good results that can help your net, but I don't see the 10. I could see how looking inside the numbers, you're in the top 30, which would mean you're a both home and away tier one game. But yeah, I would love to be able to tell you, you know, I'd love to be able to tell you, but KenPom, you know, the predictive metrics, they love them, and margin of victory is usually the reason why.
Titel, they have two tough games left, honestly, at Santa Clara, at San Francisco.
Those are two real
tough. If they can't win those two games or even get a split in them, could this team actually be left out with a 10 BPI and a 10 net?
I don't think so. If you have an easy, quick way chat of doing the thing where you show what would happen if they lose their remaining games just so people could physically see the resume, that'd be great just to see if they're tier one or tier two losses. But I just think when you have
tier one.
Name, the brand name of the Gonzaga Bulldogs, which it's not a power
there, conference. There it is on the right side.
Yeah, I mean, just adding a couple more tier one losses. I don't think that is going to hurt you too much. If they blow their opening conference game to a horrible team like Pepperdine by 30, push the panic button a little, or lean on the panic button.
I it's interesting that you say that, Titel. You're very, very good at guessing the candidate. I made this comment the other night in case you missed the show. Tell me if I'm – and I'm not basing this on anything other than a gut feeling. I think when we see Gonzaga's name called on Selection Sunday, the overall reaction will be like, oh, my God, that's four lines higher than I thought they'd be.
Mm.
Could be. I mean, what line do you think they belong on? Like the 14 line?
Me? I think they're 9 or 10, and I think they're going to be placed on the 6 or 7.
I'll defer to Rocco. I don't think this is a 6 seed.
I don't either. I think the – well, excuse me. I don't think so either. I think
it's interesting because KenPom and the BPI say they're a 3 seed.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Indiana was nice to give them a third win against the field, so that was good. But I think – yeah, I think right now, just with everything being so out of whack with the resume, like the WAB at 48, and I think the SOR is 51. Those are the two kind of primaries. That would suggest they're in the NIT. And I think that has to really be considered if they're in this position at the end. Now, again, the good news about the WCC is that all of their tournament results will be done by the time the committee's actually voting. Even the WCC championship game will be over. So that's always the best thing about this league. But and usually Gonzaga cuts down the nets in Vegas. So we'll see how that plays out. But if all hell breaks loose and they lose in the semis and they lose these two, I guess there's a chance they could fall out. I still don't see it. I don't know. And they'd be a
the
very
bubble is so too. Weak, Rocco. I think I know. Your West Coast is safe for a two bid league. At least a two bid league.
Rocco, any chance Rocco San Fran could get in if they go to the finals and lose to St. Mary's?
Well, I think they'll be very much in the mix if they can sweep just this week. They have their best road win right now, unfortunately, is only Loyola Marymount. But if they get that Oregon State road win, then they have something to work with a little bit on the road. They were undefeated at home. This game against Gonzaga is in the Chase Center on Saturday, the NBA where the Warriors play, where the West Regionals are. But it's going to count as a home game. But they have those St. Mary's win. That this would at least demonstrate they've beaten the two big dogs of the league. They have some decent road damage and no real bad losses. I know Bradley and Wazoo are out of the field, but at the time they lost to them, they were reasonable losses for sure. And San Francisco's had a great year. They've had a great year. So I think you could at least look at them pretty closely if they get these wins.
All right. Real quick, one final conference. Matt, let me bring you here on the A-10, where we saw what, you know, kind of the game of the year in the A-10. VCU really handled George Mason fairly easily.
That's really like VCU is basically poor man's Gonzaga there. You look very good predictive metrics, not great resume metrics. And, man, that's one – If they win out the regular season, I think they get a bid. And like I said, that'd be another, I don't know, two, three, okay, at least three more tier three wins to get me out. They'd be 13-4 in meaningful games. And that you don't stub your toe against Richmond, which you absolutely cannot do if you want to get in. But like, I think there's a real path to this. I thought for the last couple of weeks when I did close reevaluation of it there, that I think Lindsay Sandman now all of a sudden the strength of record being 46. You win these next four, and I think that'd be decent enough you could take them given the predictives.
Yeah, and what we were talking about here is the idea of a two-bid A-10 with the George Mason or somebody else stealing the auto bid. But Dorman, I think George Mason, I don't know that there's a path. At the very least, I think they got to win out to the A-10 finals at this point.
Absolutely. We don't have a tier one win yet. The only thing I could – they're going to have to beat VCU along the way, and I'm with you, Chad. It's going to have to be a devastating, terrible loss in the finals to even really get a real look because there's just not enough meat on that bone. And the Power Boys are picking up, you know, a few here and there, and it's unfortunate for them. But, yeah, I'm with you.
And they're not facing VCU until the final.
Correct. Yeah, go back to the side-by-sides there, Chad. I mean, aren't these essentially the same profiles? I mean, like, aside from non-conference strength of schedule, where one is bad and one is atrocious, you know, the conference record is the same. The overall record is off by one game.
I'll tell you, and Griggs, I'll tell you, Zach, what the difference here is. It's that VCU has those predictive metrics that George Mason does not.
I could see that. All right. And VCU, very unlucky, 313 in luck. Whereas Mason, quite lucky at 43, very lucky.
They did try and schedule Mason, Duke, Marquette.
This week, Mason hosting Fordham and at Duquesne. VCU, the rivalry game at Richmond before they host Davidson.
That is not an easy game to win. I think they'll win it, but it's not easy.
Loyola's playing their best ball of the season too. Loyola's going to make some noise in the A-10 tournament.
On that note, that's it for the Hoops HD reports. Let's go to any of our final thoughts here. And Joby, let me start with you.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of focused on the bubble teams tonight, and the only benefit I kind of look at the aggregation of all the teams in the Power Five conferences, unfortunately taking a lot of fun out of it, you know, from the crossways, all these different, the demise of the Pac-12. The one added bonus it does give is a ton of winner-take-all bubble games. and particularly in the SEC. And so, you know, Georgia, Texas, and you know, that adds a lot of fun. And so, you know, and hey, tune into the SEC network the rest of the season, because you're going to see bids at stake every single night.
Absolutely, I agree. Rocco, let me go to you next here. So don't get a little noise in your background there. Maybe I'll have you mute after you after your final thought. So you pick up that noise.
It's a little random over here. This event was supposed to end like an hour ago. I thought I was good, but they're still chatting it up. Anyway, I would just say the SEC network as a whole, like, it's a good thing to watch at the end of the night. They just show highlights nonstop, 30 minutes at a time. You never miss a beat in that league. If we had that for all 31 leagues, we'd be hitting the Holy Grail. I need that for the Patriot League, the American League, et cetera. But my final thought also on the bubble is, I really feel like I don't know which leagues it's going to happen in. We saw it with the ACC and the Pac-12 mainly last year, kind of big surprises with NC State and Oregon. But we also saw it in lower mid-major leagues. Could get another combination. I think there's a bigger propensity for it to happen in this NIL era that we're in, based on the fact that once these teams know they're in, like, why, you know, what, you know, maybe see how it goes in the first round. Maybe you'll try to win it after that first day. But I think a lot of these teams are just going to check out when they get to their conference tournament if they know they're in, and that's going to open the door more for those hungry teams that are going to those conference tournaments knowing that it's win or go home. And I just think it's even more extreme now with the NIL component, because coaches are getting bonuses for making the tournament. Players are probably getting incentivized knowing that they're already in. And why waste your body playing in the tournament if you're already in? So I just think that it opens up the window for bid steals.
And we've kind of always
look what happened last year in the ACC.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. And
it was a Final Four team.
It's even more
and
extreme.
The Mountain West, because New Mexico getting an 11 seed clearly shows that they would not have gotten the bid.
There were five.
They were out.
There were five teams from multi-bid leagues that won the tournament that would not have gotten in. Duquesne was one. Who won the American? UAB won the American. There were five.
Dorman, you're up next.
Yes, if you've been following along, you probably heard Coach Mick Cronin of UCLA has been very testy and upset about his team's travel recently. But my problem with Coach Cronin is, a few years back when he went into the meetings with the football coach and the chancellor and the president, he was all for voting in and taking the Big Ten money and taking the Big Ten network and getting UCLA on this big platform. Well, Coach Cronin, with that comes, you know, you have to go to Rutgers. He's complaining, Cronin. He's seen the Statue of Liberty and the White House too much. Well, Rutgers has been in New Jersey for 100-some years. Okay, Penn State didn't move to Happy Valley recently. Iowa is stuck in the middle of Iowa. Nothing happened there. This didn't throw him off. Like, did this just pop on him? Coach Cronin, you knew where you were going. You went after the money. Fine, I have no problem with it. But don't complain when you got to go play these teams. I feel bad for the softball team and the diving and the swimming, because they don't get to travel like your team, Coach Cronin. They don't get to go first class the whole way. They're going to have over delays and rainouts and freezeouts. It's going to be rough for them. But for your team, Coach Cronin, I've heard enough of them. Enough.
I'm with you, Dorman. We got to get Iowa out of Iowa right now.
Correct.
We got to move that school. We got to move them. Titel, let me bring the screen share back up for you.
I got to follow Iowa stuck in Iowa. I'll do my best. So I wanted to talk about Texas Tech guard Chance McMillan. He's a key reason for the Red Raiders' success this year. 2020, he actually began his career with the Lopes, spent 2 years coming off the bench, and then was a starter in 2022, transferred to Texas Tech in 2023, and went back to being a super sub. This season, he had started every game. Update, he's out tonight against Houston with a lower body injury, but he's turned into one of the best shooters in the country. 53% from the field, 45% behind the arc, 88% at the free throw line. If he can make each of his next 16 free throws, which is actually a real possibility considering he's made 11 of 11 during his past three games, he could become the first member of the 50-40-90 club in a few years. Trivia: the only college player to do that since 2018 is Joby, any thoughts?
He's stumped.
DeAndre Hunter, no.
Close. Trey Murphy III for UVA 2021.
There you go. There you go.
Pull it down here again. By the way, Michigan did get that one in Nebraska. But Matt, you're up.
I will say this to pull on. Rocco took some of my thunder about conference tournaments, but man, this year I am rooting for chaos. And that, like, there are a bunch of teams in the bottom of the bubble I do not want to see get in. And I think there's a decent chance, especially with the wins over bubble, as long as teams like Drake and UC San Diego, who I think are in pretty decent shape in those metrics, would get bids and thankfully knock some of this junk out, because, man, like, it could be an ugly dated if things held to form.
Could. Greg, so I'll finish off the show.
Yeah, real quick to just sort of amplify one of the things that that Dorman said about the travel. While they're going long distances, they're also on airplanes, and most of the time they're on chartered planes. So while New York and New Jersey are a long way from Los Angeles, it's still a shorter amount of travel time than what. Like, look at Conference USA and how far they have to go, and like what airports they have to fly into, and what planes they have to take, and what buses they have to take to the campuses after they get there. And you know who had a rough week of travel? IU Indy. Their bus blew up. Fortunately, nobody was hurt.
Literally.
But by
the way, if everybody does want to help out, they are looking to raise funds. There's a lot of equipment, a lot of personal items lost by those players, so our shout out to them.
And we'll mention that for sure on Wednesday, and probably have a link for that, but mention it tonight as well. And the second half of my final thought, also something we discussed earlier, was Utah making the decision to get rid of Craig Smith. And generally speaking, and pretty much universally, I'm not against a school's athletic department making a change. I typically don't feel bad for coaches. They are under contract. He is getting paid. But I don't see the sense in making the change now. Who are they going to interview this week that's available now that wouldn't be available once the season was over? And part of me just kind of feels like the story isn't over yet. Utah probably wouldn't have gotten the wins they did or gone on the run that they needed to in the Big 12 tournament to get inside the bubble and get in. But why not just let it play out and give them that chance? Like, why finish it before it's over? You're 80% of the way through the movie. Even if it's a bad movie, don't get up and leave. See if the ending's any good. I just kind of, while I don't care, while I think they had every right to do it, and while financially he's going to be taken care of and he'll only be out of coaching as long as he wants to be, I still don't like that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure this is not the last we've heard of him by any means.
Yeah.
But on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back Wednesday night with our final Under the Radar show of the season. Starting next weekend, we got Championship Week video notebooks. We got a bracket rundown Sunday. Hoops HD report next Monday night. But on behalf of John Tytel, Matt Zukowski, David Dorman, David Griggs, Joby Fortson, Rocco Miller, check him out at bracketeer.org. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again real soon.